The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone, to this edition of H2O here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Jason Hunt here, along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we sound a little bit not quite normal this week. This is actually our second attempt to record this episode. Earlier this week, I was down in Texas for the Fan Expo Dallas. And the recording configuration that I was using only recorded one side, and it was only my side, and I could say that it was recording the important side, but Tim had some very valid points to make. So we're going to try this again, and next week I think we're going to sound completely back to normal. But with the weather and schedules and such, Tim is actually coming in via remote this week, but that doesn't make his opinions any less valid. So welcome, everyone. We are talking this week about some news that came across the wires earlier. Last week, let me do a little setup here. Last week, I ran across in my prep for Week in Review, ran across a link on Facebook, actually, for a website called Skylar.com. And we're not going to link to it, because it just basically is, here's a news item, and oh, here's all this stuff for sale.
Right.
But the item, the news part of that item was that apparently there was a rumor that had been going around very recently. It was a new rumor that 20th Century Fox was working on a sequel to Big Trouble in Little China. And those of you who know this movie, if you've been a fan for any length of time of this John Carpenter-Kurt Russell collaboration, there have been a lot of people who have wanted to see more adventures of Jack Burton. And we never got it, very much like we never got a sequel to Buckaroo Banzai. We never got a sequel to Big Trouble in Little China, even though there was a possibility there from how it ended. Everybody's like, oh, a sequel, and it never happened. Because Big Trouble in Little China was a box office bomb, and the studio said, we're not going to do anymore. But this thing started flying around the internet, and I could not find any corroboration. I could not find any other site, any place, anywhere on the internet that confirmed or, some other source for this story. And so I didn't do anything with it. I tossed it, because I'm not going to perpetuate just from some one source thing that didn't attribute the story to anywhere. Just said, hey, 20th Century Fox is working on a sequel. Okay, who's your source? And I even contacted them, and I said, well, who's your source? Where are you getting this from? Because we'd like to follow up on this story, and we want to know if there's anything to it. And the email that I got back was, oh, well, you'll have to contact the writer of the article. I was like, well, I'm contacting the editor. The editor better know where this information is coming from. So that never went anywhere. So I tossed it, and I didn't think anything of it. But then, lo and behold, on Monday of this week, I think it was, The Tracking Board. This is a website that is insider information, the movers and shakers and the deals and the spec scripts and all of the inside baseball stuff. Very much like Variety or The Hollywood Reporter, only they do get what looks like quite a few exclusives, and it's more inside the fence type of stuff. And they ran a story that 20th Century Fox is indeed working on a new Big Trouble in Little China project. Only it is not a sequel. It is a reboot, a remake. And producing and starring in this as Jack Burton, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Which, okay, now all due respect to The Rock, I mean, his star is in the ascendant at this point. San Andreas did a really nice number at the box office over the weekend, especially considering that it's not a remake or a reboot or a sequel or a franchise film or anything. It could very well be a one-off. He's got the G.I. Joe, he's got Fast and Furious, he's doing okay. And in terms of genre stuff, the Journey to the Center of the Earth movies that he's been doing, those seem to do well enough that on his IMDb listing, he's got 4 and 5 listed as in some state of development or another. So yeah, The Rock is a big star right now. He's huge. He's big. Not only physically, but from the standpoint of the success of his project. So from that standpoint, okay, you're going to get somebody big and popular and you know, the Benedict Cumberbatch of the month. It's going to be The Rock. But I just can't see The Rock as Jack Burton. Because Jack Burton, Kurt Russell did such a phenomenal job as Jack Burton because, and this is something that you see in a lot of these pictures from the 80s, the heroes, the stars, the action guys, were not these big, bulked up, superhero type guys. They were normal. I mean, look at Bruce Willis in Die Hard and Danny Glover in Predator 2 and Kurt Russell in Big Trouble in Little China. They're not ripped. They're average. They're regular Joes. And I think that's I don't know. I'm doing all the talking here. You say something and cut me out.
Well, it's an interesting thing because you know, you bear in mind that this is a film. The original film was in many ways kind of a reaction to the kind of films we were getting at the time. That was the 80s, so you had Commando, and you had, you know, all your buddy cop flicks, and here you have Kurt Russell playing a character who is good-looking and swaggers and is, you know, God says all the right things, and he's not only not really the hero of the movie, he's kind of an idiot. And that's the joke. I mean, it's, you know, here you have the, here's this very funny, kind of subversive, action fantasy mix that I think in many ways was very much a product of its time. And
oh, yes,
I think
very
that,
much.
You know, you had, I mean, you know, Dwayne Johnson can certainly do comedy. We've seen him do comedy. I can see him playing the sort of cheerfully oblivious kind of character. I think he's got the ability. But I think it you know, you're looking at something that comes out of a time where movies were different and the audience was expecting different things from the movies. I think it's a really, I don't know if you would end up with a film that really kind of hits the same kind of humor, and if you're not going to do that, then what's the point? And not to say that remakes can't be done well. They certainly can.
Yeah.
Battlestar Galactica is kind of the gold standard for that in many ways. I mean, it took a relatively goofy ripoff of Star Wars and turned it into something that was basically 9/11 social commentary.
Yeah. Although goofy, it's more goofy in hindsight than it was when it first aired. I mean, because, you know, in 1978, when we're 8 years old, it's not, you know, it's pretty cool.
Well, but that's kind of the other thing is that, and we've talked about this before, is that the, just like the television at the time was different. We have an expectation now of different kinds of stories,
mm-hmm.
you know, and one of the ways that we've seen poor remakes of series from that time, whether it's been, you know, the comedy film versions of, say, Starsky and Hutch and Dukes of Hazzard, which miss the point. Or you get something like, say, The Bionic Woman, or...
Knight Rider. Oh,
Knight Rider, yeah, yeah. Because they were, we were looking at story, we looked at television differently. We expected different things from our television storytelling at that time.
Right. It was very episodic, no big arcs.
Right. Every episode was had a reset button.
Yeah.
And we don't want that now. In fact, shows that try and do that, I mean, you can certainly do that you know, your sitcoms and things like that, but when you get into your genre stories, those shows that try and do that now just don't work. And they don't succeed because that's not what the audience wants. I think when you get to those reboots, you run into a very curious thing. Knight Rider, when we were watching Knight Rider as kids, a talking car was cool.
Oh yeah,
a talking car was science fiction. Now we have cars that talk.
We have phones that talk.
Yeah, so it doesn't have the same kind of impact, and you end up with something that the reboots and updates for Knight Rider have just not worked.
Right.
So when you get to something, when you're rebooting something from that era of storytelling, you run into a problem. And I think this was the problem for things like Dukes of Hazzard and Starsky and Hutch, was that those shows in retrospect can look very silly or very simple.
Yeah.
But they weren't meant to be silly or simple at the time. And so when you sit there and go, ha ha, that's so funny, let's make a comedy, they're generally not funny because the source material wasn't funny.
Right.
And it wasn't, I mean, you're not making a really a parody of that. You're just thinking, ah, ha ha, this is so funny. Your audience is, they weren't laughing at it when they watched it the first time. The nostalgia isn't about them being funny.
Right. And I'm leaning toward the assumption here that this is not going to be a parody simply because the people that are writing it, Ashley Miller and Zach Stentz, are the same people who did X-Men First Class, and it doesn't... And I'm making, granted, I'm making a huge assumption here just based on that, but I'm wondering if something like this would be in their wheelhouse to do as a parody. And I don't think it would be, because it sounds like, I mean, if you're hiring the writers of an X-Men movie, and you've got The Rock as your Jack Burton, this smells like franchise setup.
Oh, it certainly could be, sure. I think it would be really, really hard to do it as a parody anyway.
Yeah, because it was basically a parody of all the action movies of the time.
Right. It'd be like trying to do a parody of the Naked Gun movies. it's like Turtles All the Way Down. How do you get lost?
Right.
But I think that you also end up with, there was almost a, there was almost a simplicity to the time, in a way, the way we looked at like Eastern culture.
Yeah.
And I think at the end, and there was a certain amount of recognition that the stereotypes are worth pointing at and laughing at, but also you can tell kind of a fun, rollicking adventure. And I think it would be, and I'm not saying they can't, I'm just saying it's going to be tough to do do that kind of story well, because you don't end up in parody territory.
Yeah, well, especially too the fact that so much of a film's success now rides on the non-U.S. box office.
Oh, sure.
You know, and which was not the case back then. You had you know, Hollywood movies, and they did blockbuster performance in the United States, and if they happened to be successful overseas, then gravy on top. But it would, you know, the dynamic, the formula for box office success is so radically different now as well. Especially when you consider the how much foreign money goes into making these films. I mean, Iron Man 3, how much money did they get from China?
A scene that none of us in the States saw, but even the folks in China looked at and went, why is this here?
Yeah. Because they wanted the money. I mean, and they wanted China's money. And China's money apparently is very, very important right now. So you're right, the stereotypes that are in that movie, and they are obviously over the top, exaggerated for the purpose of the comedy in the film, which I think they can get away with, but they have to be, you're right, they have to be very sensitive to that now. But I think if you have something like the mysticism and the curse and all of the stuff that comes in with David Lopan being a creature of his time rather than a creature of now, modern times, you might be able to get away with a little bit of that. The feudalism, the feudal society, way back in the day type of attitude. Because, you know, the whole story is about virgin sacrifice in order to achieve immortality.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, one, you're going to have sites like the Mary Sue kind of look sideways at it, like, okay, virgin bride, virgin sacrifice, are we really going to do that to the woman? You know, you're going to have that kind of reaction, because there was not, I don't want to say rabid, but I do want to say rabid, the feminine, the a certain segment of feminism was not as vocal, active back then. And you could just tell a story and not have to worry about the gender politics or the diversity politics or anything like that. And you know, not only are you now looking at, you know, sensitivity to the Chinese, but you're going to have to figure that at least Gracie Law is going to have an action scene or two, and, you know, just to make sure that she doesn't have her agency taken away from her, because, you know, that's going to be a complaint if they were to do it like they did Psycho, where you do just a shot-by-shot remake. There would be all sorts of complaints about how the female characters are handled. So, you know,
well,
that's all got
to
be real.
Again, we come back to a different type of storytelling that was more common than now.
Yeah.
And that becomes and we see this a lot. We see it in other genres as well. Things go in and out of fashion. the kind of, you know, some the Western was really, really popular for a very long time, and I think a lot of people related to the very almost always, not always, but almost always, you know, the very clean good versus evil, white hat, black hat, you know, core to a lot of those stories. But the thing that brought the Western back was Unforgiven, which was one. You know, there was no black, there was no white, there was only just dirty, dirty shades of gray.
Right.
And luckily not 50 Shades of Grey, because that just would be a terrible combination. Yeah.
Well, now, but although the success of Unforgiven did not usher in a new era of Westerns.
Well, it kind of did. Unfortunately, it didn't take off, because we got things like Tombstone and Wyatt Earp. What ended up happening is that people, I think, recognized that you could use the Western to tell a story, but you were not going to get that kind of explosion. I mean, it was decades where the Western was a fairly dominant form of entertainment.
Yeah.
So you're gonna definitely find an audience looking at some of the stereotypes and the damsel in distress and all these things, and sit there and say, really? We're in 2015 or 2016 or whatever the film would come out, let's call it 2017 or whatever.
Right.
You know, we're doing this now. And I think that but in some ways that could still work if it's written well. If the comedy is there, if the audience is saying, oh, I get the joke. And that comes down on the writing and the performances and the direction, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
But it's tough. It's tough because, you know, it would be, it's like you couldn't make Blazing Saddles now.
Oh,
nobody would make it.
No,
nobody would touch it.
No, not with a 10-foot, but not with a, what was it, a 49 and a half foot pole?
Yeah.
Yeah, not at that all.
And it's a genius comedy. It is.
And you know what would happen if somebody wrote Blazing Saddles today, whether it was Mel Brooks or anybody else, as soon as the script leaked, whoever wrote it, their career would be dead. Because they're racist.
Well, because they wouldn't be, you know, the thing is that they, you know, from reading the screenplay, you probably wouldn't get the show. You probably wouldn't see, because, you know, that, again, it comes down to performance.
Right.
And direction, and that whole thing that Mel Brooks did there, where he sat there and went, this is racism, laugh at it. Mm-hmm. And because that's, you know, he saw that was a really effective weapon against racist ideas, and it was incredibly funny for that.
Yeah.
And again, product of its time, you know, the U.S. that we lived in when that film came out, you know, that spoke to a lot of people. Not only did it speak to a lot of people as a comedy, but it also spoke to a lot of people as, this is why it's funny that we're laughing at this. That's a tough thing. That's a tough thing to capture. I mean, not even Mel Brooks can capture it every time he makes a movie.
Right.
You know, for Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles and Spaceballs, we also got Dracula Dead and Loving It.
History of the World Part 1.
You know? We got, you know, as much as I enjoy Robin Hood Men in Tights, it's nowhere near as good.
No, no.
As Young Frankenstein. No. You know, so if, you know, not even someone as genius as Mel Brooks at that can capture it every single time. So to expect, and that would be the concern for someone like Big Trouble in Little China, is that to capture the right voice, where you have that balance between playing with those stereotypes, and, you know, especially when you consider that your villain is, you know, the old school yellow peril Fu Manchu, you know Asian sorcerer villain that is not only a pretty awful stereotype, but it's a pretty awful trope.
Yeah.
You know, it's been done to death.
Well,
finding the way to make that funny.
The Mandarin in the Iron Man comic books, same kind of thing. You have the Fu Manchu mwahaha type of thing.
Sure. Which you'll note the Marvel Universe has not managed to bring to screen.
Right. Although, you know, it's talking about Asian stereotypes and Asian characters, I think they're missing an opportunity with the Ancient One in Doctor Strange, you know, by considering Tilda Swinton for that. Because there's an opportunity there. Yes, it adds another female character to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it also takes away an Asian character from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I don't know that the trade-off is equitable.
Well, and you can sort of understand all the desire to have Tilda Swinton. She's an amazing performer. She's always very interesting to watch. And you know that she could just do, you know, a really, really amazing job. But it does raise the question, you know, and it is, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is very much the ultimate universe in many ways, from the now currently, you know, gone ultimate universe in Marvel Comics. So they've changed quite a bit. You know, Nick Fury looks like Samuel Jackson. That's straight out of the ultimate universe.
Right.
So, yeah, it becomes a real question as to, you know, what kind of story they're going to tell, because if they take, you know, Stephen Strange off to the Far East to study, you know, to learn magic, and that's where he finds Tilda Swinton. I mean, okay, you know, they may have missed an opportunity there to have a really fantastic Asian performer step in and play the part. So. It's a tough thing.
Yeah.
As much as we would love to see more original stories.
Yeah.
The remake. We're in the business as a species. We're in the business of the remake, and we have been for as long as we've been telling stories. You know, Shakespeare was big on the remake. He rebooted a lot of other people's scripts. Doesn't
right.
make him less of a genius, but you know, he was telling. In some cases, he was telling stories that have been told for years and years and years. So this isn't a new thing. There's a lot more money involved now.
Yeah. Speaking of money, speaking of actors in certain parts. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break here. We're going to let you hear from our sponsor, SuperheroStuff.com. And when we get back from the break, we're going to talk about actors and our suggestions for the cast of the new Big Trouble in Little China. All of that coming when H2O continues right after this.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at superherostuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. Superherostuff.com, where heroes shop.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV. That's our YouTube channel where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. all part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out, Sci-Fi For Me Radio and Sci-Fi For Me TV, all part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
You're listening to Sci-Fi For Me Radio because it's the second best invention in the history of the world.
End credits theme to Big Trouble in Little China that is from the original, performed by the Coup de Villes, which was John Carpenter, Nick Castle, and Tommy Lee Wallace. John Carpenter, of course, the director of Big Trouble in Little China, among other movies. You might have heard of him, maybe. Welcome back to H2O. Jason Hunt here, along with Timothy Harvey by phone.
Hello.
And we are talking about the remake, the impending remake of Big Trouble in Little China, starring The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. And I don't see it, but he's going to be playing Jack Burton. And so now the question becomes, who do you populate the rest of the cast with? What actors fit? And of course, the question becomes, what kind of movie are you making is going to determine what cast you use. Because if you're making a straight-up action flick, as opposed to an action comedy, as opposed to a parody, your cast is going to be very, very much different depending on which direction you go with the type of story you want to tell.
Oh, yeah.
So let's assume, just for the sake of argument, let's assume that they're going to do a fairly faithful remake in which our quote-unquote hero, so-called, Jack Burton, is not necessarily the hero, but as we have determined in our perusal of the story, he is the sidekick. So that leaves the hero being Mr. Wang Chi, originally played by Dennis Dunn. So who would you get to play Wang?
Well, you know, there's there's a the days of there being a whole lot of really, really amazing, great Asian actors is kind of here. There's actually quite a few really mm-hmm. good Asian actors out there.
Yeah.
But I have a funny feeling that because he is really hot right now, the studio would probably want to do something like go with John Cho. He's got genre cred. Star Trek.
He's got Selfie. You know, don't forget Selfie. Selfie is most important.
Oh, of course. he's hot. And I would much rather have a different actor. I've got two in mind. But it kind of depends on how you want to skew this in terms of age,
right?
You've got Steven Yeun over from Walking Dead, Korean American, plays Glenn on Walking Dead. He would bring his own audience. You know, there's plenty of people who would, you know, and they marketed, you know, they definitely marketed up that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'd bring in a pretty good crowd with him.
Yeah, and so I think, but he's also a younger actor, so that would determine some of your casting choices. I kind of really want Ken Lang.
Although, if you go younger, it actually works a little bit more because of the story, you know, the bride coming over from China and you know, they're getting ready to start their lives together, and it would make sense to have somebody younger. But yeah, I think either one of those guys would work just fine in that part, because you know, they're I don't know, do they both know martial arts? Do we know that?
You know what? I honestly don't know. And
I mean, it wouldn't take very much. You know, it wouldn't. You know, you could learn it.
Well, and also I think that in some of the cases, the because
half of it, that show was wire work anyway. So
yeah, well, you look at some of the martial art works from Big Trouble in Little China, and it's, you know, it's no Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but yeah, I think you know you. I think either of those guys could play the part very, very well and carry it and give you that. They both have the kind of presence that when the audience, and of course, I, you know, this is, we're talking about an audience that apparently has never seen Big Trouble in Little China, and so this would come as a surprise that these guys are actually the hero.
Yes.
So, you know, because, of course, the movie audiences live in a vacuum, and they've never seen any other film except for the one they're watching right now.
Yeah. Well, and they've never seen any of the other versions of anything that they're watching now. We know that for a fact as well, so.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes. So, okay, so we've got, let's assume we go younger with the casting of Wang. Villain wise, I've got an idea for my villain. Who would you cast as the villain, David Lo Pan?
Wow. You know what? There are some really, really interesting actors who could play that. And, I actually have a couple in mind who are one is, I think, seems really, really clear, and the other one is probably a little more out there and a little more obscure.
Okay.
for this kind of thing. I'm gonna start with the obscure one here because it is the outside choice. I kind of want to put Jackie Chan there.
Really?
Yeah, because he's there's a certain amount of over the top theatricality, and when I say certain amount, I mean like all of it.
All
right?
Of it, yeah. Lo Pan's very theatrical.
Oh yeah, and I think he could actually do it. We know he can play comedy. We know he can actually play drama because he's done it too.
Yeah.
He's known for playing comedy. And there's a physicality to him that, you know, he can conceive, you know, you can conceive him as being a threat. You think of him as a comedic actor.
Yeah.
So it's a little on the outside. But at the same time, I really, really think he could do it.
Funny bit of trivia, though, for those of you who don't know, Jackie Chan was originally, he was the first choice to play Wang Chi in the original movie. John Carpenter wanted him to play Wang, and he had decided to concentrate on his career in Hong Kong and turned it down. You know, there was the very real possibility at that point that we would have gotten Jackie Chan in that movie. So yeah, it would make sense to have him in this film in some way.
So that would be a lot of fun. The other one that I think would be kind of cool, and the one that is a little more mainstream, Chow Yun-fat.
Oh, now see, that's who I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think Chow Yun-fat would be very good at it, because he's done a little bit of comedy. What was that one he did with? So one of the guys from Dukes of Hazzard, American Pie. What was that film?
Is that the one where he was the? See, now I've gone completely off on that too. Was it The Replacement Killers? Although that was actually a lot of fun too. I can't remember. I think I know the film you're talking about though.
Yeah, it was called Bulletproof Monk, I think, is the one it was.
Okay. Where he's, so yeah, he can do comedy, and he's got presence. I mean, if you wanted to have moments where you really played up the level of threat, if you wanted to give the audience a moment where the villain is really scary.
Yeah. He could do it.
He could definitely do it. I think, Ken Watanabe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he could do it, too. Because he's done the not real Ra's al Ghul.
Right.
As part of Batman Begins. He could be another one.
There's another one for heaven's sakes, they have canceled it, so he needs a gig. He was on whatever that horrible science fiction show on Sci-Fi was, but The Outbreak.
Helix.
Helix, yeah.
Hiroyuki
Sanada.
Yeah, yeah, he could do pretty well too. I don't know that has he done comedy.
You know what? I think he could pull it off because there were moments. I'm honestly not sure, but I think there were certainly moments in Helix when he was very funny.
Yeah.
And I think he could do it. And talk about somebody who can look scary one minute, and I mean the character is essentially. Kind of crazy on Helix, so he kind of bounced around for various things. Especially in this last season, he was the character was actually insane. So, I think he could. I think he could make it work. You've got a good set of actors. I think that they could get to play. And who can play. Would be able to play from inside the stereotypical Fu Manchu villain and make it work if they had the right material.
Yeah, because you gotta make sure that the script is such that they can actually play with that and not have to be fighting it in order to get a good performance out of them.
Yeah, because we've seen films where you've got really, really amazingly talented people who are suffering under an underwritten script. And for something like this, there's so many things with the tone and the way it's structured that you have to hit right. That if you can pull that off, then you've probably written the characters right. So
yeah.
I think all those guys could really bring the right level of menace and humor and cheerful exasperation at
sure.
their plans being thwarted in such an irritating way.
So speaking of irritating, who would you get for Gracie Law?
See, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because you really have to find somebody who can not only be the beautiful leading lady, be believable as someone who is, especially now, who is a captive but is not bowed in any way.
Right.
And somebody who can play off the Rock in such a way that, for all the fact that there's this, you know, attraction between the two, he's a constant source of irritation and frustration. and you have a little more flexibility on age, I think, with her.
Right.
Actually, I was thinking about this. You know, I have not seen San Andreas, but I'm always a big fan of having Carla Gugino in anything.
Well, and they've worked together a couple of times now with Witch Mountain, and she's in San Andreas as well with him. Yes.
Right. She plays the ex-wife or soon to be ex-wife or something along those lines.
Right.
I believe very strongly that she should be in a lot more movies, actually. But certainly she could definitely bring that stuff to the part.
Yeah.
She's proven that over and over again. I think it would be. I think it'd be a fun pairing. Now they might want to skew a little bit younger. I saw somewhere that they, and I think it was actually the original post is that they had Keira Knightley.
Right. Yep.
And
compared to The Rock, she may be a little bit too young.
Well, too young, and basically, you know, she's like the size of one of his arms. and that's not a slight on her. She's a fairly petite lady, and he's not a fairly petite person at all. I mean, he's a large guy. There could be some visual humor there, but it just seems like a really weird visual pairing to me.
Yeah, and that's one of my concerns with The Rock as Jack Burton anyway, because he's so physically imposing. It's going to be really hard to sell him as the sidekick. Just because...
Well, but again, remember that with the original film, the joke is that he looks like the action hero.
Right.
So you could definitely, as long as you had his character written in the same vein, you don't depart too much from that sort of, well, clearly I'm meant to be the hero,
right?
Mentality that, and then then you can subvert it. But I think the biggest problem, one of the biggest problems I have with him in the part is not that he couldn't do it. It's just that the look between Kurt Russell's original character and The Rock is so different.
Yeah,
I mean it's such a huge visual contrast. I'm not saying it can't be done. Certainly in the same way that Russell was, you know, he looked like the action hero of the time. The Rock looks like the action hero of the time now. Liam Neeson looks like the action hero of the time now, apparently.
And stop and consider that Kurt Russell was the action hero of the time, because you got Snake Plissken, his turn in The Thing, and you know, all of that, and you know, and even Sky High played on that a little bit, where you have, you know, it brings him back to his Disney roots for one, but it also, you know, he's playing a superhero, you know, who's got a history of being a hero. I was like, well, yeah, of course, it's Kurt Russell. He's an action hero. So it does play into that. And he's actually playing against type in a way. It's almost like William Shatner poking fun at himself now for his early career. You know, Kurt Russell was kind of doing that same kind of thing in Big Trouble in Little China. I don't know that The Rock is going to be poking fun at himself so much. Well, I mean, because he already does. It's not anything that's going to subvert his action star status. so much.
No, he's one of those actors who is not confined himself to playing just the character that, you know, he plays in every film. I mean, he's done quite a bit, and when you're considering that, you know, he's somebody who, when he first started acting, he was not initially taken seriously because, of course, he was a wrestler.
Right.
You know, so, but he definitely has, he's you're not going to get the same kind of subversion. But, you know, in some cases, it hasn't always worked when people have tried to do that in other things. As much as I enjoy the film a lot, especially for the fact that it's full of inside baseball film references, Schwarzenegger did not do well with Last Action Hero.
Right.
When he tried to subvert himself, yeah. Subvert his own image. When Stallone played completely against the type that he was known for in Copland, which is a great movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, fantastic film.
It didn't do anything. It didn't have any kind of impact, and it was a shame because I watched that film going, somebody start giving the man real dramatic roles after this. I mean, this is, just let him play in these other genres, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's, I think we're not likely to see, you know, too many, we haven't seen too many things like that happen. You know, when Leslie Nielsen played against his acting career, with, Airplane, you know, he and Kurt Russell were, I think, two of the folks who were able to do that, pretty effectively, but they're in the minority.
Yeah. So who would you get to play Mao Yan?
Ooh, choices. Again, it's going to depend on your age,
yeah.
on if you're casting older or younger. Jamie Chung could work.
Mm-hmm.
For younger. Kelly Hu might work for a little bit older.
Yeah. Now she was my first choice, but you know, again, you've got to look at the age, especially, you know, if she's going to be the young virgin bride, as it were.
Right.
Then you're probably going to want to go a little bit younger, and of course nowadays it's very, very important that she's got to be Asian in some way, shape, or form, so you're going to have somebody who looks the part.
Sure.
You know, very much opposite what we've got in Aloha with Emma Stone playing a half Chinese or something or other. Apparently there's a big blowback on that now, but
That's what happens when you cast it. You set a film in Hawaii and you put your entire leading cast are all white people.
Yeah. Well,
that's
no, see,
it's a little like, oops.
Yeah.
And see, Cameron Crowe has actually come out and apologized.
He has. Yes.
Yeah.
We will stipulate that. Now Chloe Bennett is half Chinese, but she doesn't look Chinese, so she wouldn't fit the part. Now, I've seen the suggestion of Kristen Crook from Smallville and Beauty and the Beast, but she doesn't even look. I mean, she's played Chun Li in the Street Fighter, the most recent Street Fighter. But you know, even she doesn't. I don't think she would be able to fit the part. Now, speaking of Chun Li, you know, you've got Ming Na Wen out there, who still looks really good. But I don't know that she's. I don't know that she's quite young enough to play Miao Lin.
Consider we can go back to another genre actress, though. Grace Park.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And she's doing, I guess she's doing pretty well on, it's Hawaii 5-0 she's on.
Hawaii 5-0, yeah.
I think she's young enough that I think she could do the virgin bride and not have the audience completely rolling their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
there's a joke in there that, making some horrible joke about, you know, finding a virgin bride, period. But there actually is a joke about that too, and I can't remember what it is. But Yeah, I think, and she, I as an actress, I like her a lot. She's really good.
Yeah, she did. She did a fantastic job in Battlestar Galactica. I have not seen her in Hawaii Five-0, just mainly because I'm not a big fan of Orci and Kurtzman remaking everything under the sun. So
yeah.
I've not been looking at Hawaii Five-0.
My understanding is that in terms of a remake,
I mean it's a continuation.
It does pretty well.
It's a sequel, but still,
yeah.
It's you know.
So I think that's I think she could do well. And there's a lot of young Asian actresses who are getting some screen time right now, but I can't speak to people like Jai Won Ha or. Actually, Yoon Jin Kim from Lost. If you're going to go a little older, but see, you know, she's in her 30s, so she'd be a tough call for playing someone who's the virgin bride. But I've got Listel up, a site they never go to, and I'm looking at just a lot of very, very lovely young women who are probably very, very talented, and I just don't know anything about them.
Yeah. Well, and this could also be a place where you could have somebody in an introductory role. You know, this is their first time in an American production. Can be part of this. So this is an opportunity part for somebody, possibly. So,
I think definitely that could be, and it's also the kind of part that you could put a unknown in without too much trouble. I think if you have the right actress, you could do it and give them a good springboard for an American audience.
Yeah, you mean too much big trouble.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Exactly what I mean.
All right, so now, on to Egg Shen. Now, I've got a thought.
Yes.
I've got a thought about this, where you could do this a couple of ways. I think the classic nod to the original way would be to have James Hong play Egg Shen. James Hong, of course, played Lopan in the original. He was the villain in the original, but now he's old enough. I think he could get away with playing Egg Shen as the narrator and the guy who comes in and has the mystic powers and whatnot to face off against the evil people.
Oh, sure.
But then there's also the opportunity to, as we're doing nowadays, gender bending and race bending and whatnot being the practice du jour, you could gender bend this one, and Egg Shen could be played by somebody like Michelle Yeoh.
Oh yeah, and I think that would actually be kind of fun. I think it would not be too much of a problem there. I mean, I think that, for all the places where you can see that going wrong, I think that would actually work.
Yeah, I do too. But now, Jackie Chan could work in this part as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he definitely could. And I think that there's if you're not going to put him somewhere else, he kind of almost seems tailored to play that part. I mean, to some degree, he's, there's built-in comedy, and he's got he kind of has the look for it at this point in his life, too.
Yeah, he does. Especially if you look at him in The Karate Kid. is a similar kind of thing there in terms of not really playing against type, as it were, but you know, doing some of the unexpected stuff. And sure, he's the mentor, but you know, it's just like Pat Morita in the original Karate Kid. You've got this unassuming, low-key performance, and suddenly there's the aha moment where it's like, oh, you know kung fu. You know, those kind of things. Where, you know, Egg Shen is the same kind of way. He's this very low-key, unassuming, you think he's just the innocent bystander telling the story type of thing, when he actually turns into a kind of an Obi-Wan Kenobi type for the story, and oh look, he's got powers, and oh yeah, there's more to this guy than we originally thought. So that character has his own aha moment there. So yeah, I think Jackie Chan could definitely pull that off.
Now, if you want to really just, you know, mess with people and have a good time, George Takei.
Yeah,
that could be fun.
Do you think that he would even consider taking the part, since this is all set in Chinatown and he's Japanese?
You know what? I think that if
I mean, I know what he said about John Cho playing Sulu. He was okay with that because Cho is Korean, I think. But,
right. Well, yeah. I think that he's Korean American. I think that if it was a well written part, I mean, if they got the script right, and I think he would be he would probably, based on just, you know, his personality and his love of the genre, he might. I mean, that's a really good question as to whether or not he would want to take the part or feel comfortable taking the part.
Yeah.
But I think he could certainly do it, and I think that would be kind of fun.
You know,
whether or not he would want to is, you know, that's the real question.
Or have him play Lopan. You know, let him be the villain for once.
Oh yeah, no, I think that could be fun too. So yeah, no, for all the potential to get this wrong, there are some really fun things you could do with casting for this film, and you could have, you know, you could have some really interesting people involved, and have a really strong cast that was not all white.
Yeah.
Considering how terrified Hollywood seems to be about doing a film that is aside from like doing a family drama, because we've had those. But you get into like an American-made genre film or an American-made action movie, and you're not likely to see too many race variations.
Yeah,
you're not likely to see. I think at the time you go back into that time of filmmaking, it was almost easier to do that. I think Hollywood, because, you know, Hollywood wasn't as terrified because there wasn't so much money involved.
Yeah. Well, and you've also got, I mean, you also consider, though, I mean, Danny Glover was the lead in Predator 2, and you also had Maria Conchita Alonso in that movie, and Reuben Blades.
Also remember that Danny Glover was coming off, you know, a Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon, yeah.
So, I mean, he was already clearly a bankable star. But also remember that Predator 2 didn't do anywhere near as well as the first one.
Right.
And
that's,
so, I mean,
that's,
you know,
Gary Busey's fault.
Well, yeah.
Everything's so, Gary, yeah, I mean, Busey's fault. Everything's Busey's fault.
Well, I'm not going to lie and say I'm thrilled about the idea of this remake here. It doesn't mean it's not potentially got
it could be a really, really, really great thing, and it could be an utter disaster. Those are the two things. I don't see anything in the middle with this one. It's either going to work and it's going to blow everybody away and think, oh, yes, this could be a franchise and it's going to be great, or it's not. It'll either be a Mad Max Fury Road or it's going to be a Bionic Woman. I don't think there's an in between.
Yeah, well, if Mad Max Fury Road is going to be your litmus test, that's going to be your bar. That's going to be a little dangerous. And that is really an example of a sequel, a reboot. It's a sequel and a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
That was really, the fact that it succeeded at all is actually pretty amazing.
See, I want to know if I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that George Miller did it again. And I want to know if this new production is going to involve John Carpenter in any way. Because if Carpenter's involved and Carpenter puts his stamp of approval on it in some way, they bring him on as a producer or something, then I'll be much more comfortable with it than if they completely shut him out.
Oh, yeah. No, that would be a terrible, terrible mistake.
Yeah.
To shut him out.
It'd be like Jem and the Holograms. Not consulting with Christy Marks, who created the Jem and the Holograms. Hey, let's talk to the person who wrote the first one, maybe.
I am dying to see what Dustin has to say when he watches that film. I think the rant is going to be epic.
Yes. And speaking of epic, we've come to the end of another epic episode. We're going to have to close this one down, or we'd be talking about this one all night. It is going to be interesting to see what happens with this one. I would imagine they're probably just now getting into the development phase and the script phase. So rumors, of course, will no doubt start to circulate as soon as the script's been handed in. We'll start to get some more news about casting and director and production team and whatnot. So we'll be keeping an eye on this. Hopefully, it will be a good remake that's respectful of the source material. We can hope for that. And in the meantime, we will find other things to talk about here on H2O. For now, we'll head out. If you've got a comment or if you've got suggestions for a cast for the new Big Trouble in Little China, you can leave us a comment or send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. You can find us on all the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube. And go check out our YouTube channel. We do have a weekly roundup of the genre community headlines over on Weekend Review. And we've got a number of other podcasts here that you can listen to besides H2O. We've got Level 117, which is our Marvel podcast. Our DC podcast is called The Rogues Gallery. We've got Sci-Fi for Chicks, which I hear Drew Powell from Gotham listens to the chicks talk about Gotham.
Yeah, I heard that was
a fun bit. It was like, oh, really? Yeah, we're going to have to step our game a little bit because we got famous people listening to our shows. So that's fun. And you can catch repeats of this show over at AmazingStoriesMagazine.com. Their website is AmazingStoriesMag.com. Amazing Stories, of course, founded by Hugo Gernsback back in 1926, and the current iteration of that magazine. They syndicate our program. We're very happy to be there. We will be here again next week with another topic of discussion. Timothy Harvey, thanks very much for joining me here, sir.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you, our faithful listeners, for coming back for another episode. And we will do it again next week here on H2O.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is SciFiForMe Radio.